And in sequence, the previous chapter, chapter 9, is a super chapter. It's the Chatur Shloki verses of the Bhagavatam are there. The heading of chapter 9 is Answers by Citing the Lord's Version, which is preceded by chapter 8, which is Questions by Maharaj Pariksit. Of course, Maharaj Pariksit has a lot of questions in chapter 8. And the questions he asks in chapter 8 constitute about 2.5 cantos worth of answers. So they're very broad. And penetrating deep questions. So the questions asked and the purports in those questions, very wonderful chapter. Chapter 9 is Answers by Citing the Lord's Version, is the title of the chapter. So Shukadeva Goswami, of course, refers to Vedic authority when he gives these answers. In fact, he cites the Lord. And he does so by describing in the 9th chapter Lord Brahma before he even does the creation. He achieves perfection of self-realization and God-realization by following the Lord's instruction, tapa, tapa, tapa. The whole of the spiritual world manifests right before his eyes. He sees the Lord, he comes before the Lord, he asks questions of the Lord. The Lord gives answers. So answers by citing the Lord's version. That's the chapter sloki verses, that's the centerpiece of the chapter. And then continuing chapter 10 is Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. So it's a continuing summary of the questions asked in chapter 8. A little further back in chapter 4, he just asks one question, Maharaj Pariksit. How does the Lord carry out creation? We know that he's the Supreme. That's already been established in earlier discussions. So that means he's the source of everything, spiritual and material. As far as the material portion, how does he do it? Not who does it, but how does he do it? It's the process of creation. And so that takes several chapters to answer. And after hearing that answer, more questions. This is the pattern of Bhagavatam. It's a question-answer session. And at some times when the Lord is giving an answer to a question, when Shukadeva Goswami is giving an answer to a question, Maharaj Pariksit says, wait, wait, wait. You just said this, and can you describe more about that? And there's the sidebar, then they come back to the flow, and more. Oh, that was very nice. Can you say more about such and such subject? And that's how the flow of the Bhagavatam goes. So, Canto 2, Chapter 10, starts with, the first verse is a summary of the 10 subjects, or naming of the 10 subjects of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So there are 10 subjects in the Srimad Bhagavatam. According to the standard of Puranic literature, there are 1 Mahapuranas, which have 10 subject matters. There are Puranas that have 5, and there's Upas that have 3. And but not only that the Srimad Bhagavatam has 10 subject matters, that is, the subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam have their, in other Sattvic Puranas, or other Maha Puranas, they have also, like Vishnu Purana, has these same subject matters, and therefore the Sri Vaishnavas rely most heavily upon Vishnu Purana, and Padma Purana, and Korma Purana, the Sattvic Puranas. Gaudiya Vaishnavas rely on, the primary source of reference is Srimad Bhagavatam, as the Amala Purana, amongst the Sattvic Puranas. And that's indicated in several places. One place that Prabhupada refers to is the Nagpur verse where Canto 1, Chapter 7, where Narada is being instructed by Vyas, Narada is instructing Vyas to compile the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he tells him how to do it. He tells him that you should do as I did. Fix your mind in complete concentration upon the personality of God and no other. And that which you realize, that will be the subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he does that, and he gets this vision of the Lord. He sees behind the Lord as the external energy, and through this he's understanding the relationship between the Lord, the external energy, the marginal living entity, how the living entity becomes bewildered, how the living entity becomes free from bewilderment and suffering. And he unnecessarily is undergoing suffering, and so Anarto Pashamang Sakshat Bhakti Yogam Adhoksa Jay, that verse. Lokasha Janata Vidvangs Chakre Satvata Samhita. Chakre Satvata Samhita. Prabhupada refers to that verse often when just making general lectures to a large audience, so that he would explain the position of Srimad Bhagavatam. The position of Srimad Bhagavatam, according to its author, Vyas, is it's Shuddha Sattva, or Vishuddha Sattva. It's transcendental literature. There's other references that indicate how Srimad Bhagavatam is. I'm emphasizing this because it's coming up in the upcoming verses. It's transcendental literature. There's literature that points to transcendence, and there's transcendental literature. The Vedas in general, because they come from the Supreme Personality and Godhead, we consider them transcendental because ultimately they're pointing to the Supreme Personality and Godhead. Often through gradual elevation by process of yajna. In the very early days of our Hare Krishna movement in Boston, there was a little pamphlet published, this was 1969, 1970, Prabhupada published, or told the ISKCON Press to publish this little pamphlet, that the correspondence with Professor Stahl. Professor Stahl was a census scholar. It might have been at Syracuse University, or it might have been at Gainesville, I can't remember which one. And there was a correspondence between Professor Stahl and Prabhupada about what the Vedas are teaching. And Professor Stahl was emphasizing Vedas teach yajna. And that's the purpose of the Vedas, is to perform yajna. And then Prabhupada's reply was, unto whom? And Professor Stahl was, no, unto whom? Yajna. Like Karmakanda. That was his position as a Sanskrit scholar. He wasn't, you know, referring to Jaimini and the his Karmakanda doctrine, but that, you know, this is contemporary stuff compared to, you know, Vedic times. Scholars of the Vedas reach this conclusion. The purpose of the Vedas is simply to perform yajna. So Prabhupada writes in his Bhagavad Gita commentary, which was done before he had this correspondence with Professor Stahl. But some people say the purpose of the Vedas is yajna. And that is true, that yajna is very strongly presented, but yajna means unto Vishnu. So yajna by Vishnu. Another name for yajna is Vishnu. Another name for Vishnu is yajna. Because who is bhoktaram yajna tapasam? Who's the beneficiary of that yajna? And you just, you know, write him out, or delete him out. You don't have a whole picture of what the Vedas are, or the yajna is for. So, the other parts of the Vedas point to Vishnu. And obviously some people don't get what it's pointing to, they just get the hand that says, work. That's coming up also. One of the 10, according to this list, this list in the second canto, chapter 10, text number 1, one of the 10 subject matters is utaya, which is impetus. And the impetus, as explained, is fruitive activity, or through fruitive activity, the desire to enjoy. That's the impetus for an activity. I want to enjoy. And so, yajnas are provided. For those that don't understand the purposes to reach Vishnu, it's, I want to enjoy fulfillment channel. So, how the other 9 objects connect with the 10th object is to understand the transcendence of the personality of Godhead. Which for us is, it's common sense. For some people, it's not common sense. They don't get it. Work is worship. Worship who? Work is worship. Yajna is for the sake of yajna. Like Professor Durkheim. Prabhupada had a dialogue with him and it's transcribed, and Professor Durkheim was arguing knowledge for knowledge's sake. And Prabhupada was saying no. For what purpose is this knowledge applied? And Durkheim was saying it doesn't matter. For what is it applied? No, that's my religion, is knowledge. Yes, but knowledge to achieve what? Just knowledge. Like some people, at least during my youth, I've heard this come up again of late. What is life? Life is a journey. Journey where? It's just a journey. There's experiencing different things. That's what life is. It's like, you know, the little line, row your boat gently down the stream, merrily. Life is better than just experience, just journey. Don't ask the question where. From where to where? There's no from where to where. It's just existing. And when the journey's over, it's over. This is because people have these ideas because they're not in contact with the Vedas. They're not in contact with a bona fide message of understanding the Vedas. Just like the verses that we read yesterday evening about the soul. Even to understand the soul. You cannot understand the soul without reference to the Vedas. People, 80-something percent of the American population in the year 2000, 86%, accept that there's a soul. Are they living their life that way? What does it mean if they accept that there's a soul? It really doesn't mean anything practically. It doesn't mean anything. They could be gobbledygook or a soul, they'll live their life the same way. It's I want to enjoy. Okay, there's a soul. I want to enjoy. There's not a soul, I want to enjoy. The soul is a marshmallow, I want to enjoy. Whatever. So, what's really important is I want to enjoy. The fruitive mentality is so strong. It's the sense of who I am. Doesn't really matter. If there's some idea of who I am, it's I'm the kind of person who wants to enjoy this way. That's who I am. It's not very deep. So to speak of where does everything come from? Anyway. The Bhagavatam is transcendental literature. As the tenth item is ashraya. That's ashraya means the shelter and all the other nine things, and that's everything. Or Prabhupada is translated with a nice Latin phrase, summum bonum. Summum bonum. It's another language that says the absolute truth. A nice term. That from which everything else emanates is the absolute truth, that's Vedanta. Janmadhyasya yatana, so summum bonum. The shelter of everything else, which has no other shelter. So, asama urdhva. There's no sama or urdhva. There's nothing equal to or greater than. That's the absolute truth. And you can't say that about any other entity. Any other entity may be the shelter of so many other things, but that has its cause or its shelter. Its source of emanation. The effect of some prior cause. What's that cause that has no prior cause? Whatever that is. Whatever it is, that's the absolute truth. So these people that teach the Vedas, speak about yajna, they say that's the absolute truth. It's karma mimamsa philosophy, it's the absolute truth, it's work. Religiously performed, but work. Or the atom, and Kanada, and his theory, and so on. But modern people are saying, Prabhupada says it. What? There's nothing new that's being taught. If one can understand these six philosophical doctrines whatever is going on now, whatever went on in the past, whatever went on in the future, it's just one of those six or a hybrid. It's just old wine in a new bottle. I call it a different name, and it's the same old. So, what to speak of the absolute truth? It's the original. And it's the responsibility of teachers of Christian consciousness, especially acharyas, but practically speaking, any one of us that are, when we're acting with interacting with others, it's our duty to understand these 10 subject matters, and how we present them may be different. As long as we don't change or adulterate or mess up the essential teaching. So that's the Bhagavatam, teaching these 10 things. They're all supported by ashraya, and he's the object of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. But then there's these other 9 topics, starting with sarga and visarga. Quickly go through them. The verses do that. Sarga. I'll read with text number 3, says what sarga is. The elementary creation of 16 items of matter, namely the elements, the 5 elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, then the, that's 5, and there's 5 and 5 and 1, that makes 16, right? What's 5 and 5 and 1? How much is 5 plus 5 plus 5 plus 1? 16. You right? It's 5 plus 5 plus 5 plus 1. 16. 5 gross elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. 5 objects of the senses. 5 knowledge acquiring senses. That's 15. And mind, the 6th sense, sometimes called. 5 knowledge acquiring senses, ears, nose, tongue, touch, smell, that's what you did notice, sight, the eyes, nose, tongue, ears, and touch, to perceive those 5 objects. 5 objects, 5 senses, instruments, acquiring knowledge, 5 gross material elements, and then the captain of the team. Mind. 16. The same 16 is presented in chapter 4, where Shukadeva Goswami is answering the process of creation. So the Lord generates these 16, it's already stated, and he causes them to manifest from an unmanifest state, and he causes the living entities to become involved with those 16. Otherwise they can't be involved until it's caused by the Lord. So we're taking, you know, we're downstream saying, hey, this is me. Not, you know, it's not me, nor did we cause it to happen. We cannot cause it to happen without the sanction of the Lord, even if we want it to happen. I want to enjoy. But if you don't have senses, you don't have sense objects, you don't have instruments, you don't have a mind, you got a hard time enjoying. So he does so to, it specifically says, he does so to help the living entity fulfill their desires, which is utkaya, I want joy, impetus for activity. The main point is It's all dependent upon the Lord. The other nine subjects, which are discussed in the Bhagavatam, and are very important for us to understand so that we can understand the Lord. In fact, that's what Maharaj Pariksit says, the reason I want to know about these things is I want to know about my Lord. Because when I can understand how great God is, it gives impetus to love Him. When God creates, the world knows God creates, and we're really busy forgetting Him even in the name of remembering Him. Trying to enjoy under different names, different brands. So the platform of devotional service, of pure devotional service, flows very naturally out of understanding the greatness of God, how all these things happen. So that's why there are subject matters of the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, we don't need those subject matters. We'll just chant Krishna's name. But to chant, according to Haridas Thakur, in order to chant Krishna's name effectively, we have to have the proper understanding of the relationship of things with Krishna. Conversely stated, if we don't have the proper sambandh again, how things related to Krishna were chanting, with misconception. People do that. They call God's name with misconception. The hijackers that flew the planes into the trade towers. Allah, 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 crash. They're calling God's name. Most likely, or we're thinking I'm on Allah's mission here. You know, surely there's a misconception. So having proper conceptions is necessary to get the full effect of chanting God's holy name. And so these are subject matters in the Bhagavatam. They're important for us to understand. And help us become pure in our devotion. More deeply appreciate how wonderful is Krishna. Okay, so these 16 generating them is known as sarga. Footnote actually is 24. But he's mentioning 16 and that's quite okay. It's implied. Which Prabhupada adds in the report. Whereas subsequent resultant interaction of the modes of material nature is called nisarga. So, in short, sarga is what the Purusha avatars do, and this sarga is what Brahma does after that. They set up the whole thing. Purusha avatars. Here's the ingredients. Here's the plan, the blueprint. Here's the impetus. Here's self-realization. On your mark, get set. Oh. Brahma puts it all together. He can't put it all together without Vishnu giving him the plan, the impetus, the ingredients, the intelligence. Self-realization is not incidental. It's for the level of what Brahma is doing. What Prabhupada writes in the fourth chapter, he says that in order to do what real creation is, one must be self-realized soul. Or what others do in the name of creation is just it's called technology. It's reproducing that which already exists. Take any technology and that's what it is. So creation is this primordial kind. It requires being strongly and clearly connected to the Absolute Truth, understanding what Brahma had to understand in order to do the creation. He had to understand all the push and pull, the cause and effect of everything. And that's a lot. So he had to put it all together. Those scientists are going backwards. How does it all fit together? But he just had the ingredients. And he didn't have a prototype. The copy. He had to figure out how to make the original. With nothing to look at. To copy. There was just darkness. And a lotus flower. For Jung. And that's creation. So creation requires complete knowledge with full realization of all the Vedic wisdom. Brahma had that. And that what he does is Visarga. He puts it all together. And then once it's put all together, there's Poshanam. There's protection. And there's sthanam. This makes four of the ten. Sthanam is sthana, like situated. It means where the planets are. Vedic cosmology is in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. It's also in the Vishnu Purana. It's in any Mahapurana. But how the planets are situated, how everything is protected, the laws governing this creation, not that the Supreme Lord was whimsical, he just, like a child, built a sand castle and walked away. He made an arrangement for the whole thing to be maintained and serve its purpose of elevating the souls within that creation to the stage of perfection. So he gave laws, how codes of conduct, how to use this machine, operator's manual, how to use this creation and interact with this creation in such a way perfection of life can come. So the Manvantara is another Uttaya mentioned already. So there's six. Impetus, how to use that impetus in proper ways, according to the laws of Manu. Isha Anakata. What does kata mean? Krishna kata? Topics. Topics about Krishna, right? So, Isha kata. Topics about Isha. Isha means the controller. Topics about the personality of Godhead. That's one of the 10 Srimad Bhagavatam topics. Nirodha. Going back to Godhead. And then, Ashraya. The Lord who is there in the realm of Godhead, in spiritual world. This is the one that's supporting all the other topics. The other topics are to take us to that one. To think the topics are something unto themselves is foolish. And there's a lot of that foolishness that goes on. We will not understand the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam without having carefully considered the subject matters of the other cantos, or the other 9 topics, to take us to that 10th topic. So, the Bhagavatam is not linear. Okay, over in this cubicle over here is number 1. Next, cubicle number 2. It doesn't work like that. It's very diversely composed, stitching everything together to bring us to Krishna. Here's the translation of text number one. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, in the Srimad Bhagavatam there are 10 divisions of statements regarding the following: creation of universe, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, the creative impetus, the change of manas, the science of God, returning home back to Godhead, liberation, and the summum bonum. No purport. And the purport comes a little bit later. To isolate the transcendence of the summum bonum. To isolate the transcendence of the summum bonum. Prabhupada has translated this word Vishuddhi. So we know it's Shuddha and Vishuddha. Isolate. So that's like goodness that's unmixed with passion and ignorance. Vishuddha sattva. The sattva, sattva's mixed with passion and ignorance. Right? Where there's, in this world where there's goodness, even good people have their buttons. Their anger button, or their lust button. At a certain point, because there's a mix. And Vishuddha is, there's no mix. There's no more passion, no more ignorance. You can't trigger Krishna to become angry, or to become lusty. There's no such thing. Or one who is in pure Krishna consciousness, uncontaminated by the modes of nature, that's Vishuddha. And the literature of Srimad Bhagavatam is also Vishuddha Sattva. Chakra Sattva for some time. Amala Purana. So, in order to isolate the transcendence of the Supreme Lord, the symptoms of the rest, the other 9 items, are described sometimes by Vedic inference, sometimes by direct explanation, and sometimes by summary explanations given by the great sages. So, the last 3 words in text 2 is Shrutena, Artena, and Andasa. Shrutena. Shrutena, by Vedic evidence. Sometimes by Vedic reference, Shrutena. Artena, by direct explanation, which is going to follow. He's going to give direct explanation. Vyas, in compiling this. Or Shukadeva, in speaking this. He's just going to explain it. Artena, direct explanation. And sometimes by summary explanations given by the great sages, that Mahatmana Anjasa, by Anjasa, summarily making references to great authorities, like Shukadeva Goswami was asked by Maharaj Parikshit, can you describe how the Lord makes the process of creation happen? He says, a chapter later, yes, and I will do so by explaining how Brahma explained it to Narada. Right, so that's one of the exposition, how the Bhagavatam is set up is to explain these 9 topics, or to isolate the transcendence of the Supreme Lord, the 9 topics will be presented in one of the 3 ways. Shrutena, Artena, and Anjasa, or Mahatma Anjasa. That's very clear. And we'll find, we did a little inventory. One of those three is always what's going on in Bhagavatam, although the format is questions and answers. Vedic reference, direct explanation, statements from other great soul, great sages. So now text 3. The elementary creation of 16 items, you mentioned them, is known as sarga, whereas subsequent resultant interaction of the modes of material nature is called visarga. So, Brahma, in order to do his act of creating, he doesn't just need ingredients. He needs the modes of nature. And the Lord supplies them. Modes of nature. And he needs time. Without the time element, you don't have things happen. Even if you have ingredients, even if you have modes of nature. You have to have time. The Lord supplies time. So then, Brahma takes all that stuff and, according to the plan of the Lord, he puts it all together. Voila. Krishna. Final paragraph of that purport. Thus, the original creation is directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead or Parabrahman, and the secondary creation, as a reactionary result of the original ingredients, is made by Brahma. So there's the first two, sarga visarga. And it's all to help us understand ashraya. Next, text 4. The right situation for the living entities is to obey the laws of the Lord, and thus the imperfect peace of mind under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Note that portion of the protection is provided by Dharma. What's the phrase? Those who protect Dharma are protected by Dharma. So, that's how the Lord provides protection. Like he says in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, at the beginning of creation, I sent forth generations of men and demigods, and with them, this process of sacrifice. With the blessing, be happy by this process of sacrifice. Be peaceful. The peace formula, the last verse of chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita. Bhoktanam Jivitapasam, Sagalokam Maheshwaram, Suhradam Sagabhutanam, Yatamam Shantim Rishati. There's the formula for peace. Be peaceful under the protection of the Lord. Now, the converse means, step outside of Dharma, and it's messy. Really messy. Very dangerous. There's Ravana's waiting to capture you outside of that circle of Ram's bow. Don't step outside the circle because it's dangerous out there. The protection is the instruction of the Lord. Stay within the instruction of the Lord through Dharma or protect it. Ravana's can't touch us. You can't touch me. You can't harm me. Because of imperfection. So, that's an important message, one of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. How the Lord provides protection for the living entity. Even others may try to harm. And they look fearful. The protection is always there. The manus and their laws are meant to give right direction to life. The impetus for activity is desire for fruitive work. and that desire for fruitive work is tied to the living entity's desire for happiness, and that desire for happiness is tied to bodily conception. The bodily conception, that's one of the 24 elements. It's the false ego, the misconception of who we are. And so, it's such a fundamental thing, but, you know, struggle as we may, to enter fully into the spiritual conception of, I'm a tiny fragment of the Supreme Lord as His eternal servant, or in simple, the servant of the Lord. Accepting the position of the humble servant of the Lord. Take care of the whole material program. Because that's where it starts. Text 5, the science of God describes the incarnations of the personality of Godhead and His different activities, together with the activities of His great devotees. So that's another one of the 10 topics. The science of God. Isha. Kata. So I'll end with this. Text 5. What Shukadeva Goswami is doing is he's laying out the composition of the Bhagavatam, because that's what he heard from his father, Vyas, and now as he heard from his father, he's sharing with Maharaj Parikshit. And of course in the audience is Sutta, who then retells the same to the sages of Naimisharanya, and that's where Vyas writes. Well, we're getting this literary incarnation of the personality guided by this dialogue between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. A pretty strong advertisement for this chapter. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Step up. What's your question? Bhagavatam has the answer. It's a very important chapter. There's a second place in the Bhagavatam, 12th Canto, Chapter 7, towards the end of the Bhagavatam. This is towards the beginning. This is almost at the very end of the Bhagavatam, 12th Canto, where, again, the 10 topics are mentioned. The list is slightly different. Starting with the verse and the verse. 10, 7, 9. It's actually 9 and 10. 10, 7, 9 and 10. It starts with Sarga and Visarga. The maintenance of all living beings, their sustenance, the rules of various manas, the dynasties of great kings, the activities of such kings, annihilation, motivation, and the supreme shelter, ashraya. Other scholars state that the great Puranas, Mahapuranas, deal with these 10 topics, while lesser Puranas may deal with 5. A slightly different list, but the same topics are covered. Any questions or discussion? letting me off easy. There's two things that really help. One is to want to get closer to Krishna, and the other is to undergo the effort of trying to get closer to Krishna. Then we want some tools to help us get closer to Krishna. So this, if the tool is provided without those two things, because, you know, it was taking us away from that application point is strong. Now, how is this going to improve my enjoyment position? And when I'm thinking my, I mean this body and mind. It's just so strong. So, therefore, one of the most important parts, or similarly, one of the most important parts of our Bhakti Riksha gatherings is the application session. And for that matter, in our lives. Our advancement in Krishna consciousness, a phrase that I have been using of late, is not how big is the stock in our little information basket. We go gather some information and put in our information basket, and you know, the one that has the biggest information basket wins. That's not our program. Our program is even something very simple. That when applied in Krishna consciousness. And you know, so our own personal disposition runs counter to that. The training, years and years of training in our education, not what you apply. It's you passing the exam. How many things have we learned that we don't use? And how amply we have been rewarded for learning, whether we apply it or not. Does it really add value to our life? Doesn't matter. That's not the role of the game. The role of the game is just information. And that's what you get rewarded for. And then, you know, real life, there's other sets of things, like you have to have people skills. You didn't teach us that in school. Information. And putting this information together with that information, and if you can do it with enough. Anyway, so, that same tendency is in the realm of spiritual knowledge, that when we think how much you know. Someone that may not understand a lot, but very sincerely applies fundamental things, that becomes an advanced individual. Doesn't mean that, you know, the fullness of understanding is not important, but the application of things is most important. I don't know if directly addressing the question, but speaking on the topic and all that. That's good. Yeah. Fourth chapter, he's directly speaking about himself, and it, you know, that the audience of Bhagavad Gita, meaning us, our focus is not upon Krishna. Our focus is upon ourselves, you know, and our problems, social problems and emotional problems, and you know, we want to be happy. We're not feeling all the happiness that we want to feel. We're very selfish. So he's giving, you know, who we are, and so the building blocks. But he's the object of sacrifice. Chapter 3. He's explicit. It's implicit, but it's also explicit. And then who he is, he begins right away, fourth chapter. Then back. Then fixing one's mind upon him. Then how to do it, how to fix your mind always on him. If somebody has a, you know, an aversion to Krishna, which everybody in the material world does, I would say he makes it easy for us. It's not clandestine or obscure. It's just, you know, palatable for people that have issues with Krishna. Look how people distort it. Nothing else? A couple of notes that are worth highlighting from the purport of text 4 of chapter 10. In text 4, there's the word sadharma. The Prabhupada speaks about sadharma in the purport. In the laws of Manu, in the different ages and millenniums, there's sadharma given, where one can terminate material existence. Prabhupada writes, the creation is not false, but it is a temporary manifestation just to give a chance for the conditioned souls to go back to Godhead. The desire to go back to Godhead and the functions performed in that direction form the right path of work. When such a regulative path is accepted, the Lord gives all protection to his devotees by his causal mercy, while the non-devotees risk their own activities to blind themselves in a chain of fruitive reactions. The word sadharma is significant in this connection. Sadharma, or duty performed for going back to Godhead and thus becoming his unalloyed devotee, is the only pious activity. Pious in the transcendental sense of pious. That's the note about what sadharma is, because it's in the verse. Note something from the purport about Shrutena, or with reference to the Shruti, Vedic conclusion. Prabhupada writes that without such a Vedic reference, the creation appears to be a product of material nature. Just see how the creation works. The creation works where it looks like God is not there. That's Maya. It's part of the design. And those that are fortunate enough to hear the Vedic conclusion, that means they have the chance to understand that the whole thing comes from God. Of course, they also have a chance to not. Near the Vedic conclusion and reach the conclusion, it's just work. Just no gift. Highest work to enjoy. That's all it is. The second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, most people think that's the purpose of the Veda. And there's nothing more. Veda Vada Vata. So-called followers of the Veda. But if heard properly, so that's what we're trying to do, by hearing it properly, then the going back to Godhead impetus comes. Because the idea of just like getting out of here, it's too much suffering, that kind of idea of liberation or salvation, that's not going back to Godhead. That's denying, obliterating suffering from the material existence, but that's not what that's about. So the impetus for going back to Godhead, that is connecting with a loving relationship with Krishna, comes from here and not here. That's the Bhagavad Dharma method. Yeah. Yeah. In its pure state. This is referring to material activity. Upaya is referring to material activity. How does that come into play? As it's playing. But how does the desire to go back to Godhead come into play? That's also explained. So, we go back. The soul has desire because it's part of the Supreme. You can't, you know, anesthetize or get out of a bag and lift out the heart of desire from the soul. It's intrinsic to the soul. So desire in terms of fruitive activity is desire in terms of serving the Lord. The impetus for fruitive activity springs out of the living entity's misuse of free will. He turns his attention away from Krishna. The desire to be happy is part and parcel of the Supreme Ananda. We have the desire also to be happy. We turn our attention away from the Supreme Lord. Burden for happiness does. And that comes out according to modes of nature and field of work, guna and karma. So one of the topics of the Bhagavatam is to explain how that impetus for field of work manifests. But then there's the other side, the impetus for going back to God. That springs out of conquering the Supreme Lord. The prompt that helps us direct that confidence of free will towards the right destination, rather than towards nothing, or some kind of other imagined thing, is the topic of the person that we're dealing with. That's our attention is to the great spiritual potency. So now, the affirmative activity, back to the question, that the affirmative activity side, upaya, impetus, that is the living entity's free will. That imposed upon it. And choose it. But then, you know, there's the whole resource to run through it. Or go play in affirmative activity. So many toys, so many distractions, so many gadgets. So many puzzles keep us really busy. All the whole lifetime with nothing but forgetting Krishna, trying to enjoy. So it's the topic is how is it 5 by the Supreme Lord to connect that soul with resources or forgetfulness through the medium of fluid activity, because the soul is active in fluid activity, independent enjoyment.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.